Welcome to the Strong Starts podcast with your hosts, Jessica Whitehead and Sarah Gerber-Kai.
Welcome back to the Strong Starts podcast. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and for following us on social media at Strong Starts Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. We've been seeing a lot of social media posts and hearing comments from educators around things like, did you try building a relationship with that student? And people are saying they're tired of hearing it. They're tired of being asked that. They're saying things like, I try so hard to build a relationship. I talk to the student every day, give them more attention, and they still do this problem behavior. Or they're afraid to set boundaries with the student they feel like they have a relationship with. They don't want to upset students. And students are struggling in class, even though we have relationships with them. So Sarah has four myths around relationships that we're going to discuss.
Yeah. So Jessica, kind of where this stemmed from is I was consulting with an amazing teacher who was doing all the right things that we think of when we think about building relationships, but she was still seeing problem behavior in the classroom. And I had this realization when I was talking to her because, again, like we were going through, okay, you have connection, you have open communication, the student trusts you, the student says that they like you, but you're still having this problem behavior. And so I had this realization, like maybe the way that I've framed relationships, maybe they actually aren't all that I've made them out to be, particularly when trying to create student plans with teachers. Because in the context of building this relationship, this teacher had uncovered all of these needs that this student had that we weren't aware of. But until those needs were met, the problem behavior was going to still occur. And so I had to rethink some of my understanding of the impact of relationships, of the potential that they have. And in the process of doing that, I came up with these four myths that I myself have inadvertently perpetrated about relationships. And so I want to bust those on today's episode. And I'm a little bit nervous to do this, guys, because usually Jessica's the one with all the crazy ideas, and this feels a little bit unhinged, but I'm going to go for it. So I think some of you is rubbing off on me, Jessica. The first myth that I want to address is the myth that relationship building happens at a certain time of day. And I was thinking about this, like in the context of kind of prescribing things like, hey, why don't you do a 2x10? You know, that's very common practice in schools. It's 2 minutes of like conversation or preferred activity time with a student, just teacher and student 10 days in a row, 2 minutes, 10 days in a row to help build relationships. And other practices like that. But I was thinking about it and I was like, but relationships are actually being built all the time. I mean, think about it. Like in your relationships with the people that you're closest with, those relationships are changing and morphing day to day. And they're really happening through the interactions. So relationships happen through that process of one person communicating a need, kind of being vulnerable, opening up, and the other person either meets that need or they don't. And that's when the relationship is either built up or it's worn down. So let's say I have this student that I'm doing a 2x10 with, and I'm chatting with them every single day, and we talk about their dog, we talk about their favorite sports team, and then math comes around and they struggle in math and I don't help at all. Like I don't scaffold their assignments. I don't provide them with their tools. Now, all of a sudden, this student is feeling let down, is disappointed, is frustrated in my class. What's going to happen to that relationship? Does that make sense so far?
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And I think that we hear things like, we got to do this 2x10 strategy to strengthen this relationship. And sometimes we forget about the rest of the day. Our focus is, okay, I've got to do this 2x10, so I'm going to do this 2x10. And then that 2x10 is over because we did it at 8:30 or we did it at 9 o'clock. And then the rest of the day, you're thinking, oh, I gave that attention to that student. I already had the conversation. And when we focus on one thing, sometimes you forget about the rest. And we have to remember that that 2x10 is in addition to the rest of the day. We still have to do all of the things all day long.
Yes. So that leads me to my next one. Relationship building by itself is a strategy for behavior management. And I'm going to say false, Jessica. I'm sorry. I feel really vulnerable with this one. But I think that what's happening is we're a little bit confusing rapport for relationships. So building rapport is what is happening through all of those getting to know you activities. But like you said, then there's the rest of the day. So you can have really good rapport with the student, like really open communication. But if there isn't mutual trust there, mutual respect, then the behavior management piece isn't going to happen. We aren't actually shaping behavior.
Well, yeah. And I think there is a little bit of a difference there between having rapport and building an actual relationship. Just because we build this relationship or we have good rapport doesn't mean, boom, the problem behavior is gone.
Yeah, right.
There's a lot that goes with it.
And, you know, what good is this strategy to get to know a student and really help them like feel vulnerable and trust us if we aren't going to meet the needs that they come to us with? The strategies are to help us start making those connections, but then the real relationships are developed through meeting needs. So this leads me to my next myth that I want to bust, and that's if you have a strong relationship, your students are going to follow directions. And here's the thing, guys. Really knowing your students does not change a damn thing if you don't meet their needs. Plain and simple. Knowing your students, being open to them, having connections with them, those are all going to help them to feel safe in the classroom. But then if their emotion brain is being hijacked all throughout the day because the instruction's overwhelming, or there's all of this sensory stuff happening in the environment and their nervous system is being overly aroused, then they're not going to be following directions.
I love this one because when we think of following directions, we think of compliance.
Yeah.
And we're thinking, oh, if I have a strong relationship, this student will comply. And that's not the case. And we shouldn't be teaching just compliance, right? But I think of having a strong relationship with my husband, and he will be the first to tell you, I don't follow all the directions, even though we have a strong relationship.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not a quick fix. A strong relationship does not compliance make.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if that strong relationship is there and there is trust and mutual respect, then needs are going to be uncovered. I feel like I can't repeat that enough. But all right, that leads me to myth number four. And that's if you have a strong relationship, your students are going to be happy, calm, and content in your classroom all the time. And this is just flat out false. I'm sorry to say, but if you have a student who feels safe in their classroom, they have everything that they need to regulate their nervous system. That doesn't mean that they're going to stay in one emotional state all day long. And you don't want them to. You really don't. Because real learning is happening when students can move through their different emotional states. They can be happy and then frustrated and then disappointed and then content and bored. You want, when students have what they need to feel really connected and really safe, you want them to be moving through these emotions. You're likely going to see that. That's part of learning, is being able to take risk and be challenged and really feel it, but then be able to move through it. And this is especially true with your neurodivergent students. So some teachers have kind of been processing with me that having those relationships are a bit of a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, you really want your students to feel safe with you. But on the other hand, once they do feel safe, you're going to see that whole student. They're going to be able to peek out from behind their mask. And this is a really wonderful thing, because then you learn more about how their brain is processing and how it is that they're able to express what it is that they know and how they take in the world around them. That teaching and learning are going to be so much deeper and richer when you get to see that whole student. But then you're going to also see that whole spectrum of emotional expression and behavior too.
Oh yeah, they're able to be their whole self with you.
Yes.
You know, and you get to see a side of them that other people who they don't feel safe around don't get to see. And it's a beautiful thing. And it's also can be a very tough thing.
Yes. And I think it goes vice versa. So with teachers too, you don't need to be happy, calm, and content all the time to have a good relationship with your student. Students are going to see through your bullshit. So it's better to be self-aware and meet your own needs too, so that students can trust that you're going to take care of yourself and not take it out on them. All right. So Jessica, those were my myths. But in our conversations about this, we've also talked about there is an importance of building rapport. So what is the importance of building rapport between teachers and students?
Well, and just to clarify, when we talk about rapport, we're talking about those connections that we make, whereas the relationship is where we take those connections and we get to go even deeper and can potentially be even longer lasting. So when we talk about rapport, that's really kind of our foot in the door. It's dipping our toe in the water. It's starting to get us there. And so it's that chipping away that we see sometimes. Relationship building happens very quickly with some students. And on the first day of school, that student's yours, right? Wow, this is awesome. And there's some students, it could take till March to get a good relationship with them. But also, when we talk about the effectiveness of relationships in regards to behavior change that you mentioned before, it's almost like you have to have one to have the other, right? So if I'm just going to walk in and do a behavior intervention with a student I have no rapport, no relationship with, there's a chance that that's not a long-lasting change. They may comply, they may not comply, whatever. But if I have a relationship and I've built that trust with a student first, and I can do some actual teaching, some replacement behaviors, I can work with a student through regulation, we're going to see a greater chance of that problem behavior decreasing and appropriate replacement behavior increasing over time.
Well, and I think that that's the piece there that it really, I know I'm nailing it home, but I really want to highlight is that's when you can find the shift between rapport and relationship is when there is that trust. And trust you can is evident through risk taking. It's evident through vulnerability. So sometimes, you know, those like meltdowns, those problem behaviors might be an indication that there is some opening up happening and that maybe there is some relationship building happening. Not to excuse it, but just to know that when students are taking risk, that's an opportunity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And when we talk about behavior change and all these interventions were put in place, what I'm really saying is skill building, right? So we're taking compliance and pushing compliance out the door. So what we don't want to happen is us to walk in, build that compliance, and then us leave. What we would like is to build that rapport, then develop a relationship, and then work with the students on skills that are appropriate. Functional communication, all the different things that they need to be successful. But we want them to trust us with that process and we want them to experience success. We want them to have that intrinsic motivation and how they want to do well.
Yeah. So we're not discounting the relationship building overall, like in the power of it. But it does sound like we also need to have some tools at our disposal while we're still building that trust and that mutual respect. And then we need to be ready for whatever it is, whatever skills we uncover that need to be built up so that that relationship can really have its maximum impact. Because I was thinking about a high school student that I had many years ago. And this was a student with a learning disability. And we had been, his teacher in particular, had been working all year to build trust with that student. And at one point, he lost his housing. And this teacher was always checking in to make sure that he had clean clothes, that he had food. He was checking in on his family every week. And that student wanted to talk to him all the time. I mean, any opportunity that he had, the student would even like take his lunch period to go and be in that teacher's classroom just to be around him. And they had really strong rapport. But then math in particular was a struggle for the student and the math ramped up and it got really hard for him and he was struggling. And the teacher was trying, you know, all of the relationship building tools that he had, reminding the student of his positive self-talk, growth mindset, all those things showing that, you know, I really believe in you, you can do this. But math class still often ended up with the student getting upset and leaving the classroom. And the behavior, you know, the teacher was really discouraged because he's like, I've spent all this time, you know, the student, I feel like we really get along. We really have a strong relationship, but he doesn't trust me when I say like he can do it. And I was like, okay, but the behavior isn't a result of the lack of a relationship. Yes, I know you guys have a strong relationship, but he still needs his math tools. Like math is the struggle and we have to meet that need and build up that skill or the behavior is still going to continue. And honestly, probably the relationship is going to deteriorate because this student is struggling so much in your class.
Yeah. So when we're building a relationship with a student, there's also a purpose to that relationship. We're finding out what the student likes, what they don't like, their strengths, what means a lot to them, what's important. It's not, you know, there's not just one end goal in mind. We're trying to find all of these things. So if we're uncovering, oh, this is a barrier or this is something they really like, we also have a responsibility to incorporate those into what we're doing when we're doing skill building. So if I uncover a need that the student really struggles as soon as someone starts asking them how they feel, and there's like this barrier there, it's my responsibility then to address that barrier.
Yes.
Barrier. I know there's a need for the student to express themselves. I know there's a need for staff members to understand this student. What can I do? What skill can I support this student with? What tools can I provide to everyone involved? And so when we're talking about building those relationships and supporting students with their behavior, their needs, their social emotional needs, that's where that piece comes in. It's now supporting what we've uncovered, like you said before, and building capacity around supporting that student.
So if we know that we need to pair relationship building with all of the other tools and skill building opportunities, what can we give listeners? What can they say in response to the, have you tried building a relationship?
Well, that's tricky because it really does depend on the situation, because there's some, I will say, I think when we're asking, when we're looking at this, we have to do some reflection too. So we have to think first, do we really have a relationship with this student? So I think, and I'm going to say, I think there is an illusion that there's a relationship sometimes. And I think sometimes we have to also think, is this relationship mutual? So do I have a relationship with the student, but does the student think that we have a relationship together? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So how would somebody be able to tell the difference? If somebody wants to build their awareness of this, what's an example of like an illusion of a relationship?
So if I'm excited every day, like, you know what? I get to see this student every day. We've got this, right? And so I greet the student and I come and I ask them, you know, how the weekend was. And they're saying, oh, it was fine. You know, and they give me little tidbits of information. I'm going to say, yeah, I had a conversation with that student. I spent time with that student. I talked to them about their weekend. But what I might not be seeing is they're not truly opening up to me. Right? They're not truly able to have that conversation. Yeah, I check in with them every day. I've worked really hard to build this relationship. But did they tell you about soccer? You know, did they say what they did last night for dinner? You know, something's going on. They're visibly upset. Are they able to be vulnerable with you?
Okay, you're right. So then let's back up a bit. Let's go through what are the qualities of a strong relationship, you know, so that we can really like work through a checklist in our mind to see if we have that relationship first. So what is a strong relationship?
Well, first of all, the relationship has to be mutual. It cannot be one-sided. And so if you're talking to a student and they're not fully opening up to you, it's probably a sign that you think there's a relationship, but it might not be two-sided.
Yes. Well, and on the flip side, you know, if deep down you really hate a student, guess what, guys? It shows. As much as you might try to mask it, it's going to show. Sometimes that looks like just like, maybe you're walking around the classroom and you just never get really very close to that one particular student when you're wandering the classroom. Or maybe you call on them noticeably less than you do other students. It might even be something that you're totally not even aware of, but it's going to show. Kids can see through the bullshit.
Yeah, I think about the students that you feel like you're walking on eggshells for. So you're kind of avoiding things or you're tiptoeing around stuff. Students will pick up on that for sure.
Yeah. And you kind of already mentioned this one, but another quality is that there's communication. And that might look different based on a student's needs and their capacity for communication, the way that they communicate. But if the communication is flowing back and forth, that's a good sign that there's a strong relationship.
Yeah. And also, we have to realize that relationships don't always look the same. So we might be comparing our relationships to student A to student B and maybe criticizing that relationship or thinking about it as, oh, I need to be able to do the same thing. But we have to realize that, especially with our neurodivergent students, they're going to relate to you differently. They're going to open up differently, and they're going to think about things differently.
100%. So let's say we've moved through the checklist and we've decided, like, yes, we do have a strong relationship. Needs are being communicated. There's communication goes both ways. It appears to be flowing mutually. We might not like totally know for sure because we can't mind read our students. But based on the way that the communication is going, it seems like the relationship is mutual. There's trust, there's vulnerability happening. So then what do we do? What do we say if somebody says, if there's problem behavior and somebody says, well, have you tried building a relationship? What can we say then?
Yeah, there's definitely things you can say back, because I think it's important for us to advocate for ourselves as well. I think that's a go-to thing that people are going to be asking and saying, and it's a little trendy too right now, it seems like. But what we can say back are things like, yes, I have a strong relationship. I have strong rapport. This student is communicating to me that they need this tool. Can you help support me with that tool?
Or you could say like, yes, I've built the strong relationship. The student trusts me, but right now I'm not able to meet his needs with the tools that I have. The student needs intervention support that's not built into our school schedule. What can we do to fix that?
Yeah, or you might have to say, no, I haven't. I haven't built a strong enough relationship that I want to. The student elopes from my room daily and spends their day with a behavior specialist. Can someone cover my classroom so that I can build rapport and trust with the student while she's with somebody else? So that might result in some sort of flip-flop situation.
Yes. And you might also have to say, no, I haven't, because maybe your response is, well, the student's nonverbal. I don't know how to relate with them. I don't know how to communicate with them. Can someone come model and coach me through how to build a relationship with a nonverbal student? But you did say, Jessica, you did mention about students who are out of the classroom. So how do you build a relationship with a student who's not in your classroom?
Well, and I think this is the biggest barrier that some educators have with students and building relationships. So if a student has this behavior, or they have, you know, they receive special education services and they're not in the classroom very often, it is difficult as a teacher to build that relationship. And sometimes you have to get creative, because if you're asking how to build a relationship with a kid not in your room, you can't, right?
Nope.
You can't do it. So the person who is building that relationship will be the one that's uncovering those needs. And you're going to have to be prepared to meet those needs that are uncovered. So sometimes you have to get creative. I know we have a lot on our plates, but it's our responsibility to build relationships with our students. Sometimes in the past, I have done things like, I will go cover a teacher's class so they can go spend time with a student. That's probably the most frequent one that we have done before. Now, there's simple things that you can do. We've also had teachers who, after they bring their kids to lunch, they will grab a lunch for that student and bring the lunch to the student. And it just takes about a minute just to say, hey, I brought you this. I know your favorite food is pizza. There was pizza today. And start just those initial conversations. And sometimes there's also things like team support. So we have to rely on a team to do that. I know, like you talked about, a student who's nonverbal. Can you go to speech when that student has speech? Mm-hmm. And so can we cover your class so that you get to go to speech with that student and learn how to communicate with that student?
Yeah. And let me say this, as this is where you and I can take some responsibility, Jessica, because as those people that tend to be the people that the student is with, if they're out of the classroom, and the people that they're building that relationship with have open communication with us, it is our responsibility to be communicating with you what it is that that student is saying that they need. And I'm totally fine with you being the good guy who is coming in. And, you know, if I said to you, hey, just so you know, like, he gets really hungry all day long, just bring him a snack and you'll be his favorite person, I'm totally okay with you being the person who is coming by and bringing snacks and meeting that student's needs, because it's going to help build up that trust that, hey, this person like is going to meet my need when I'm hungry. But also know that then there are probably going to be other needs, and we can build on that, but other needs, more skill building and things that the student is going to need in order to continue to strengthen that relationship.
Yeah, and I also think it's important to find parts of the school day that the student can come visit your classroom. Mm. So even if the behavior or the need is preventing them from sitting through an entire math lesson, for example, if you're doing something, like you said, it's snack time, is that where the student can just go get their snack from? If they have a device like a Chromebook or iPad or whatever devices your students are using, is that where they can go check it out from, so that there is a reason they have to go see you?
So, Jessica, honestly, there's probably a million and one strategies that we could put together on this. So we did want to give you all a quick down and dirty one pager on relationship building, some strategies and things that you can say in response to that infamous question, have you tried building a relationship? So check out that one pager. It's going to be linked in our show notes. And until next time, thank you all for listening. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and follow us at Strong Starts Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Bye, everybody.